This is Rocky Mountain Voices. You're listening to the VSpring V100 show, powered by PodTech.
I write to learn. And so one of the things I do is when I want to know about something, I'll start writing about it.
Welcome to the V100 show, brought to you by VSpring Capital. This is Dennis Wood. The V100 show brings you podcasts from the members of the V100, an elite group of peer-nominated and peer-selected executives. I'm here today with Phil Winley, a member of the V100. Phil, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Dennis. I'm glad to be here.
Phil, introduce yourself and tell us what you're currently working on.
Well, I'm, as you said, Phil Winley. I'm a professor at BYU, Computer Science Department. So, you know, I do all the things that professors normally do, teach classes. I have a lab with graduate students in it. What I'm most interested in right now and what I'm working on probably is the reputation work that we're doing, which, you know, builds on some of the interesting internet identity things which are happening. You know, as we get more universal, more shared independent identities, independent meaning not belonging to some company like your Amazon ID, we have the opportunity to do things like build reputation systems, intention systems, other things on top of that identity platform, which the internet hasn't had before.
So would you just tell us a little bit more about your background?
Yeah, I started off life as a nuclear metallurgist, and for some reason really liked the computers. This was in the 70s when I was studying, 70s and early 80s. I really loved the computers, and so when I was, my first job was working for the Department of Energy as a nuclear metallurgist, and I was thinking about going back to graduate school, wanted to get a PhD in something, and finally decided I was going to go get one in computer science. So I went back to grad school, got a degree in computer science, and started to be a professor. And when I came here to BYU, I kind of got caught up in the whole web thing, started a company. And eventually that sucked me out of BYU. We, kind of rode the internet bubble, hit all of the windows right. It wasn't easy. There were like 100 different places we could have derailed and gone down in flames. But, you know, for luck or something maybe else, we didn't. Ended up selling that company to Excite at Home for a pretty nice chunk of change.
This was iMall?
This was iMall, yeah. And so I worked for Excite at Home for a while after we got bought. And at that point, I had been friendly with Governor Leavitt, knew him from several meetings, helped him with some of his rural economic development initiatives. And one day he asked me if I wanted to be the CIO, and I didn't even know Utah had a CIO. I said, oh, I don't know. I'll have to think about that. That was November. And around February, I finally decided to do it and took the job and became CIO, did that during the Olympics, which was a lot of fun. And then after I was CIO, did a little consulting, went back to BYU, and that's where I'm at now.
So what are the exciting things you see happening that you're keeping an eye on for the next, you know, 12 to 24 months?
Well, I'm very involved in identity, which I guess was kind of an accident. Although, you know, what happened was after I was CIO, a friend of mine, Doug Kay, sent a note out to about a dozen people and said, somebody needs to write a book on digital identity. Is one of you interested? At that time, Doug was kind of thinking he was going to start a boutique publishing house because he'd published his own book, gotten into that. It turns out that IT Conversations, which he also started, kind of took all of his time and energy, so he never did do the publishing business. But I raised my hand and said, hey, I'll write a book on digital identity. And that was when I really discovered how many of my experiences at iMall and as CIO were really related to identity, how foundational that was to much of what we do in the enterprise IT space and on the internet, which are not the same thing. And so I wrote that book. And since that time, I have been following the identity space and running a workshop in that space, working with companies in that space. And I think there's a lot of interesting things happening right now, which will lead to new opportunities in the next 18 to 24 months, building on top of that identity system.
So for us human capital types, can you explain a little bit more? What is identity?
Yeah. Well, kind of the textbook dry definition of identity would be the set of attributes in some database record that is supposed to be related to you, the person, I mean, identity means a lot of things. There are all kinds of philosophical things we could discuss, but digital identity really comes down to most people to a record in a database somewhere. And those have always been disconnected. There are some good reasons why people like them to be disconnected, but that also causes a lot of inconvenience for people. And you know, I went to a talk at the University of Utah. They have this marvelous lecture once a year called the Organic Memorial Lecture. I can't remember his first name, was a professor at the University of Utah. And they always get a big name in for that. And a couple of years ago, Vint Cerf, who by all accounts is one of the fathers of the internet, was there. One of the things he said that was interesting was somebody asked him, if you could change something about what you did, what would it be? And, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but essentially he said, I would have put an identity layer on it. And then he said, of course, at that time, PKI hadn't been invented. You know, there were a lot of things which we know now which we didn't know then, but that's probably the biggest hole in what we did with the internet.
Do you think that can be created at some point?
Yeah, I think it's being created right now. I think that I just got back from the third Internet Identity Workshop. We run them every 6 months because the space is running so fast at this point. There are about 125 people there, and it really is a workshop. I mean, it's not, you know, we're not using workshop as the pejorative term for a conference that hasn't quite come of age. I mean, it is a place where people come to work. And you see people sitting in corners. People write code while they're at the workshop. Oh, your thing. Yeah, I can get your thing to work with mine if we just did this. Well, let's try it. And people sit down, they write code. So in 3 days, you see real progress as these people come together. And so over the last 18 months, the landscape has changed considerably. Part of the catalyst for that has been a new, I don't know if I call it a product or a feature or what, but a new offering from Microsoft that's called CardSpace. It'll be part of Vista. It'll be part of a service pack for XP. Essentially, what it does is it provides an identity layer on the internet. Now, we could discuss a lot of the issues around Microsoft and identity in their past. They've actually been pretty smart about it this time. A guy named Kim Cameron has made that happen. That's caused a lot of other people to sit up and take notice and accelerate the things that they were doing. So there's another system called OpenID, which has kind of been a collecting point for three or four systems that people had started in the last 24 months. And OpenID is really maybe the kind of, you know, upstart identity entry in this whole thing. But interestingly, you know, Microsoft and OpenID don't see themselves as competitors. They see themselves as places to interoperate. And Novell, you know, there are people, some of the leaders in this space are people here in Utah. Dale Olds down at Novell, is one of the leaders in their efforts to support this whole thing in the Higgins Trust Framework. There's just a lot of interesting things happening in that space. And I think over the next 6 months, what you're going to see is those things starting to congeal, especially as Microsoft releases their CardSpace system. And that really provides a platform for other types of systems to build on top of.
So, Phil, you're seen as somebody who is very creative. Your blog has so many different subjects that you write about, and you write consistently. And you've had an opportunity to work in so many different businesses. Where do you get these ideas, these creative ideas and business ideas?
A lot of reading and actually from blogging. You know, one of the things about a blog is I write to learn. And so one of the things I do is when I want to know about something, I'll start writing about it. And, you know, readers of my blog probably notice that, you know, occasionally I'll start writing about a new topic and I'm not really saying very much. But what I'm doing is I'm trying to get things going and forcing myself to go out and do research. I have, I regularly use an RSS feed aggregator, and I have probably about 80 feeds in that I follow. And, you know, I try and pick people to read who I find inspire ideas in me.
Do you find that your readers help you also refine your ideas aside from the process of writing, which helps you, you know what you think, right? Do you find that your readers also contribute to this as well?
Yeah, absolutely. They'll call me on things, you know, and I mean, not on the phone, but I mean, you know, they'll tell me, hey, you're wrong there. Oh, you ought to look at this, or did you see this and point me to things? And, you know, there's some that do it by comment, some that do it just by sending me an email or whatever. But yeah, that helps a lot to have other people seeing what I'm interested in and feeding back to me what they think is related to that.
So the V100 is a list of people who are most likely to start a business. Why do you think your peer selected you?
Probably it has a lot to do with two things. Past things I've done, things like iMall, and you know, then being CIO, and partly because of my blog, as you said, you know, it's a place where I very publicly and transparently talk about what I'm interested in. You know, if I were not blogging, you know, people might say, "Oh, Phil's an interesting guy, but what does he think?" I don't know. I mean, and so I think actually the notion of transparency is a big step for anybody to take. I mean, it's hard to think, well, I'm gonna be that public about what I'm thinking, but it also has attendant benefits.
It couples well with the community nominated and peer selected process of the V100.
That's true, because if your peers don't know what you're doing, obviously they can't nominate you or select you.
So if you could put $1 million of your personal money into any company in Utah, who would you invest in and why?
Well, the obvious answer is I'd invest in myself. but the ideas...
The big question is why, of course.
Yeah, the ideas I think are interesting. There's a couple of things I think are really interesting right now. One is I mentioned a while back that we're working on reputation in my lab, and I talked about this identity system that is emerging as a platform. I think that once you have shared identity, independent identity that people can use, you start to have new business models emerge. Reputation is one of them. I mean, the idea that this relates kind of to what we were just talking about with blogging. One of the reasons people blog is to build their reputation. And one of the things about reputation is it's based in some part on transparency. If you want to be completely private, it's very difficult to build a reputation. So, you know, there are examples of reputation systems on the internet. eBay has, you know, their reputation system of sorts. Google PageRank is a reputation system for URLs. That's how they sort results that they send back to you. But most of the ones we've seen so far have been in specific domains about specific kinds of identifiers, page URLs or eBay identifiers, for example. What happens when you have an identifier that you can use in several different places? Now you start to be able to develop cross-site reputation. What does that mean? Well, reputation can be a substitute for authorization, for example. I don't necessarily have to have a table which says, here's all my resources, here's all my users. Yeah, Dennis is allowed to edit these because he's an admin user. I may be able to start to offer you web services based on reputation, or I may be able to start stopping actions you take based on reputation. There are some companies doing this already. There's a company called Iovation in Portland, which does reputation for devices. And actually, some of their biggest clients are like financial institutions and online gaming places that are subject to a lot of financial fraud. So that, because what happens is people can set up multiple accounts. You know, it's the curse of cheap pseudonyms. But what they can't do, or at least that what they don't do at this point, is buy lots of machines to run those accounts. So if you can tie a reputation to a machine and start tying accounts to machines, now you can detect when somebody's using one account for fraudulent activity. All of the accounts tied to that machine are likely to be engaged in some kind of fraudulent activity. So that's the kind of identity, that's the kind of reputation benefit that can accrue once you have these kind of shared identities. The other thing which I think is really interesting right now is kind of the explosion of what you might call new media. There was a Bear Stearns report a couple weeks ago, which I found really interesting, not because there were a ton of surprises in terms of the raw concepts, but because I think the way they talked about them and discussed them were very intuitive and clarifying. And one of the things that report made clear to me is that there is a need for people who do content filtering, for lack of a better term. You know, one of the things they said in the report was infinite choice equals overwhelming confusion, right? The more podcasts there are, why are people going to listen to this one that we're doing right now? Well, I mean, they probably are going to listen to it because of the reputation vSpring has and the fact that they may be interested in the V100. So you're providing essentially this filter, right? Your reputation is providing this filter that people can use. I'm the executive producer of IT Conversations, which is not a podcast. Now, we don't really do podcasts. What IT Conversations does is we filter audio content for people. So when you come to IT Conversations, people know, you know, the kinds of things they're going to get. So I think that there is a real opportunity for people who can figure out how to do this content filtering. And I'm not so much talking about technology. There's probably technology involved, but I don't think it's necessarily an automatic thing. It may be in some cases, but I think a lot of it has to do with how can we build systems, even people-enabled systems that let this happen. Blogs are a good example. If you think about blogs, people have, you know, filled the internet with pages of blog stuff, and probably 99% of it isn't worth reading. At least to most people, right? You know, maybe your mother cares.
Yeah.
So how do you find the good stuff? Well, one of the ways you find the good stuff is by finding good blogs, right? And then you read what they point you to. Mm-hmm. So, for example, I love John Udell. He's a good friend. He's also an extremely smart guy. And I read his blog because I consistently find out things I didn't know before or have new insights when I read John Udell. And it's not just his analysis, it's what he chooses to link to and point me to. So it's not just that I read his stuff, it's that I go follow the links he put in his stuff. And so he's providing a filtering function for me. And so by choosing the people I put on my blog roll carefully, I'm using them as filters for the kind of information I get. And so that's just one example of an informal way that content gets filtered. I think that there are business opportunities around helping people get the content they want. I don't necessarily know what they all are right now. I think IT Conversations is an interesting idea. And I'm actually kind of interested in what IT Conversations could be in this content filtering kind of way. And so those are a couple of the things which I think are really interesting right now.
Phil, if you could do something completely different than you're doing right now that would hold your passions, what would that be?
You know, I've always loved history, and I'd probably be a historian. I love reading particularly early American history, the colonial period, antebellum period. I love that material. I love the era. I love lots of things about history. I love reading biographies, and I think that's something that I'm really interested in. You know, and I can't say that I honestly thought, oh, maybe I should be a historian. Oh no, that doesn't pay very well. I don't think I'll do that. I mean, it never even crossed my mind growing up. It was always just, I've always read history books. I've always loved it. So it was always just this avocation I had. But you know, that's something that probably would have been an interesting career path if I'd chosen it.
So here's my final question. If you could handpick someone to mentor you in your business, who would you choose?
You know, I actually had a number of great mentors, and it's easier to think of people who you had than people you might choose. One guy who comes to mind was Mark O'Leary, who was the executive vice president I reported to at Excited Home. And he was really somebody who taught me the lessons of hard-nosed business, and not that it was hard-nosed, but that it was actually how you made things work and, you know, what budgets were for. I mean, I learned, you know, 90% of what I know about business from Mark O'Leary, and it, you know, it wasn't like he sat me down and had conversations with Phil, here's what you need to know. He just, you know, set expectations and made me meet them. You know, there was no question I was going to meet them. He just expected that I would meet his expectations. The other great mentor I had was Mike Leavitt. There are so many good things I could say about Mike Leavitt as a leader, but one of the things that really sticks out is his overwhelming curiosity and his ability to really use that curiosity to drive himself in new ways and new directions and new ideas and bring in teams of people to help him brainstorm what he was doing. You know, so I think if I was looking for a mentor right now, those are the kinds of people I like, people who set high expectations and show you by example just really what you need to know or what you need to do.
Great. Phil, thank you for your time in Salt Lake City. This is Dennis Wood.
This has been a Rocky Mountain Voices podcast. Visit us on the internet at www.rockymountainvoices.com.